We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we're for the people of Missouri. We're for brewmasters, stockbrokers, beauty queens, and truck drivers. Whatever you do, if you're a Missourian, we're for you. We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we've got Missouri covered.
The Border Patrol is presented by Walker Medical Linen Services, locally owned and operated, and HLAC certified, meeting the highest industry standards. Walker has partnerships with hospitals, surgery centers, and medical clinics in and around the metro area. Walker Medical Linen Services in Kansas City and online at walkermls.com.
Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Stephen St. John and Andrew Katie, now joined by Jesse Newell from the Kansas City Star. What's up, Jesse? How you doing?
Good, Stephen. How about yourself?
Oh, I'm good. We got fresh football comments to talk about. We got other news items I wanted to discuss with you.
Yeah, you're getting everybody in trouble. You're getting Nate in trouble.
No.
You're getting me in trouble.
Yeah, he got accosted by Sherman when he walked in.
I walked in. Sherman was right on me. Yeah.
Fullbacks, see?
We had a good talk, though. I think.
Is that the end of the fullback in Kansas City?
Andy Reid didn't rule it out.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think with their tight ends, they want to keep all those guys. And you remember last year, they sort of juggled it, where Blake Bell got hurt early, and then Jody Fortson got hurt, and Blake Bell came back immediately, and then you got to the end of the year, and everybody was healthy, and you didn't really know what to do. So I think they like their four tight ends is probably the answer right now.
Okay, before we dig in on football, there was a significant move made by the Royals this week. I wanted to ask you about Hunter Dozier DFA'd, and we wondered if, like, where the breaking point was. How bad could he perform, and for how long before they decided, that's it, we're done. And we found out it happened finally this past week. Just like to get your reaction to that move, what it means. I mean, I think it's a good sign. It's a positive sign that they weren't just going to sit here and force the issue. Those at bats can go to younger players that need to be developed and evaluated. But what was your reaction to the move and what it means moving forward?
Yeah, I mean, it's probably earlier than they would normally do it, so that's probably a positive sign that they will eat cash when they have to and move on from sunk costs. We talk about sunk costs so much. I mean, you're paying them either way. I do want to make clear, you know, I've had some discussion with people. He had the extension, and so much talk has sort of been like, oh, is this the worst contract in Royals history? And it's like, no. Like, guys, teams eat $15 million. I know you guys had the Yankees talk last hour, or at least a little bit of it, at least what Nate would allow.
Right.
But they just... They just released Aaron Hicks, DFA'd him, and it was like 20 or 25 million that they ate. I mean, Hunter Dozier, we're talking about eating 15 million. So this happens to baseball teams. It happens. Sometimes you think it's going to work out, and it doesn't. Obviously, this did not work out for the Royals, but I think it's overall a positive sign. You know, Mikel Garcia looked like he's ready to be up here and play. He's going to play. Nicky Lopez is back. He's been productive for the Royals. There doesn't really leave a spot for Hunter, and so you move on. And John Sherman obviously signed off on moving on and saying, I'm not just going to force this out here just because I'm paying the paycheck. And I think the previous regime, there was more of a likelihood to do that, just to chase the thing to the end, to hope that you found on something. Now, my hope for the Royals is that Hunter doesn't latch on with somebody else and they rediscover his power, because we talked about last week, Stephen, how many Tampa Bay Rays players were not wanted a year ago, 2 years ago, and all of a sudden they become Taylor Walls of 8 or 9 home runs. Hunter Dozier should have some raw power in there. I don't know why they can't bring or they couldn't bring that out here in Kansas City or what the trip up was. But, you know, you're talking about a guy who's sort of like his average is bad but not horrific. He has some speed even though you don't know how to utilize it. He's obviously been a bad defender. You can't really find a home for him. But I would think there's still some raw power there that just could not be untapped this year and could not be untapped last year. So we'll see if he gets another shot with another organization. I definitely would expect he would.
If he does, though, is that a bigger indictment of the team? Like, why couldn't you get it to work here?
I think that's the fear you have, but it's not the reason that you don't make a roster move.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
like, it goes both ways. You know, if we sit here and next year Hunter Dozier's in the middle of the lineup for the Rays, then yeah, we're gonna second guess it. But at the same time, the Royals have other options there now, and when we're talking about Mikel Garcia, who, you know, is performing at the major league level and has a good approach with the plate, good defensively, and it just seems like it's his time. And when it's his time, along with Nicky Lopez's time, along with Bobby Witt's time, we talked last week about Bobby Witt now performing at shortstop better defensively than he has been, then you're running out of spots, especially for a right-handed hitter in Hunter Dozier.
I will never second-guess their decision to move on from Hunter Dozier.
Mm-hmm.
But if he goes, and I think this is, I don't expect this to happen, but if he goes to Tampa Bay and rakes, then I'll second guess the coaching or the development, right? I feel like that's the question. We've been stuck in this cycle for the past few years of, is it the talent acquisition or is it the development that's going wrong? Like, did they draft the wrong pitchers or did they develop them poorly? And I'm sure there's not just a 100% answer on one side or the other. There's going to be somewhere on the spectrum on that. But that's my only point. Because to me, how could you possibly second guess moving on from a player that had been producing like Hunter Dozier over the past
few
years?
For so long, yeah.
For a long period of time, offensively and defensively, right? Like to me, even if he goes and hits somewhere else, I can't say, well, how could they not have seen this coming? How could you see this coming? Like he had that one year where he had a pretty good year, and that was it. Everything else he's done at the major league level tells you you can't expect this guy to produce. So I don't see how you could have any issue with them coming to that conclusion.
No, I mean I don't have an issue with it. And like, yeah. I said, I think the hard conversation had to be had to go into John Sherman's office and say, hey, this is where the organization needs to go. And he said, yes, I agree with it. And I'll write the check for him to go. All I'm saying is, you know, you talk about this, Nate, and we can talk about sort of what we expect from players. But, you know, like some of these projection systems out here, what they would expect from him. I mean, what is he, 31 years old, 30 years old, 31 years old. And they'll base off of, you know, he did have that great year in 2019 and then was hurt the next year and then, you know, bad the last 2 years. But, you know, if they give him full playing time, 9 home runs, 34 RBIs, .233 average, you know, you're talking about a fringe MLB player the rest of the season, but
Who's not good defensively.
But it does speak to the original point, which is, and that's why I wanted to bring up Bobby Witt. Like, you bring in a new infield coach. You work with him in spring training, Bobby Witt. You work on fundamentals. And now the metrics, small sample size, say that Bobby Witt's a better defender. That's how the Royals win. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's not signing 18 free agents and outspending the Yankees. It's getting wins where you can get them. And so
maximizing the value of each player on the roster.
I mean, this year they put an emphasis on pitch framing. And Salvi, you know, for all that he does for the Royals, that has been a major, major flaw in his game. I mean, he's been the worst at it in the last 5 years. This year, he's slightly below average. That's a win for the Royals. I mean, that's in the margins. You're working on something that can improve your team in real measures, and that goes back to coaching and emphasis and having a guy like Salvi buy into that. So that's good. I mean, those are the signs you want to see from the Royals to say, hey, maybe by 2025, 2026, you put enough of these little pieces together and you have something, you know. MJ Melendez develops, you know, Bobby Witt gets some plate discipline. You add these pieces to these guys, and all of a sudden we have what we talked about last week, Steven, the Taylor Walls of the world, or the Isaac Paredes is the Tampa Bay Rays, the Luke Raleys, who now all have 8 home runs for them and are helping a team at the top of a division that's super competitive. But that's what you're looking for. Now, I hesitate to just, like, throw these coaches under the bus because it's been a few months, right? I mean, you've got to give some time to let this stuff sink in. But you're looking for signs. And so the Bobby Witt thing, the pitch framing thing, you're looking for signs like that to say there could be better days ahead.
Dozier was done here. That decision was made by his poor performance. But like there can't be second-guessing about this. And this name's come up to me. People have asked me about this over and over. I don't think I've asked you about this guy. And so just curious, because these are the mistakes or misevaluations that a team like the Royals can't make, right? This could have been a Tampa-like story for the Royals. And, again, it's early in the season. We'll see what happens. August 2nd, 2022, the Royals trade Cam Gallagher.
This is going to be the Brent Rooker thing.
To the Padres for Brent Rooker.
Yeah.
Okay? All right, they gave up not much, gave up Cam Gallagher. They take a brief look at him, and then on November 17th, he's selected off waivers by Oakland. Okay, the Royals let him go.
We also should mention he was off the 40-man because they signed Ryan O'Hearn.
Anywho, they looked at him to the tune of 25 at-bats at the major league level. Right now for Oakland, he's played left field, he's played some right field, and also DH. He's hitting .275 with a .382 on base, a .544 slug. That's a .926 OPS, 11 home runs, and 32 ribbies.
Would be the best player on the Royals right now.
So you're talking about this is how the Royals win. They had that guy, and they didn't give up anything for him, and they had a short amount of time to evaluate him. And look, Minnesota, he was one of Minnesota's top prospects, and he did get a longer leash there, didn't make it, ended up with the Padres. They let him go, so other teams passed on him. But that's, hey, how many guys does Tampa have where multiple teams passed on him? I don't care. The Royals had him and looked at him and said, no, he's not worth keeping here. He's not worth a roster spot. And now, like you said, he's putting up numbers that would make him the Royals' best offensive player.
Yeah, and I don't want this to sound like double talk either because, yes, the Royals had him. They did not let the new coaches get to him, and they made other decisions in the offseason that obviously, you know, they didn't even keep Ryan O'Hearn in the end. So to get rid of Rooker, that was part of that transaction, if I remember it right. I'm pretty sure I do. So that's a mistake. However, you know, we also talk about how do the Rays become the Rays, and that's by being transactional, and that's by flipping things over and taking chances. And instead of just staying in the same rut and staying loyal to the same players and not making them better, it's. I mean, you look at a guy.
I think the Rays would have let O'Hearn go and give him the spot to Rooker, but the Royals stuck with O'Hearn.
I guess my point is, if you do this enough, there's going to be failures. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to throw the Royals under the bus for Brent Rooker, who, like you said, by all indications, we didn't see this coming. Nobody saw it coming. The A's got it out of him, which is great. But, you know, like, teams make mistakes when you do this. You know, like, Yordan Alvarez, right? I mean, he got traded from the Dodgers to the Astros for basically nothing, and now he's a stud, right?
Right.
The Dodgers are thought of as, like, the top team out there, right? Or one of the top two or three. It's just, it's going to happen. It's just you want to be more on the other side of the ledger with this and have this happen. Again, we just talked about how the Rays do this. It is like magic, and I'm not saying it's easy. Player development's not easy. Having an analytics department that says, hey, this guy's got a great curveball, but he doesn't throw it enough. We need to acquire this guy, and we're going to teach him this, or we think we can do this with him. None of that's easy, but it's what makes you good, and it's the shortcut to what the Royals need to do. And so, I know it sounds like two-side talk here, but the Brent Rooker thing, I'm not going to rake them over the coals because they need to be more transactional. They need to take more chances on guys. But yeah, if lots of guys do that and leave your organization and find success elsewhere, and because they changed something or did something else and you didn't give them the chance, that's damning.
But it is of note.
It's just the way the Royals have to get there is they cannot. I think so often in the past, They didn't trade guys like Joaquin Soria. They didn't trade guys like Scott Barlow. You know why? Because they were scared that on radio here, we were going to talk about the new Brent Rooker, that they traded a guy away and he got better because he wasn't with the Royals. And you can't think like that. You know what I mean? Like, that's in the past. It's done. You got to keep moving forward. And the process is the process. You know what I mean? I keep using that word, obviously, and it was the Dayton Moore word. But you can't do this job afraid of every Brent Rooker in the corner. You've got to just proceed ahead and do what you're going to do. And the Royals can't be afraid to take chances because one or two burned them in the past and they're afraid of criticism there.
They
so,
should give us a zero Fs about what people like us say about their moves.
That's what I'm saying. And I think that was not always the case. I think that, I mean, how often did they keep guys past the expiration date and didn't trade them on because they were worried about whatever the fan reaction would be or the media reaction would be?
Hey, we celebrated like crazy when they signed Alex Gordon to a contract.
And I agree with you, but I think I'd be less angry about that move if it wasn't for Ryan O'Hearn, because that's more of a symptom of what the Royals, haunted the Royals in the past, holding on to him for too long. They only had this guy a couple of months.
Yeah, well, I mean, let's say this. Like, if this keeps happening, then the people in charge won't have a job very
often. Because I'm just saying, make a note of it. That's
absolutely.
Yeah. That's,
I mean, obviously. But if you're J.J. Piccolo, you cannot sit here and say, I'm never going to release guys. I'm never going to trade. I'm never going to be transactional because I'm worried that the next Brent Rooker is going to be taken by the A's. And again, we're talking about the A's, who are the worst team in baseball, turn into something when it could have been for the Royals. You just got to keep moving forward and do what you do and hope the process turns into good results at the end.
Okay, somebody asked me if Hunter Dozier was the worst contract of the Dayton Moore era, and I think many people said no way. Ian Kennedy was thrown out there.
Ian Kennedy.
That also was a first-round pick. It cost him. So what was the worst contract that Dayton Moore had?
I would put Ian Kennedy at number one, but I think Jose Guillen is way up there and not close to Hunter Dozier, because that money time was 3 for 36, I think, and he was terrible from the beginning. I will tell you that, like, there's a little bit of Michael Garcia when he's up to the plate. He kind of stands upright like Guillen does, and he has the number 11, and I just get a little bit of, like,
the Kennedy first-round pick part of it. The first-round pick of the Kennedy one is hard to get over.
I would say the Kennedy one's the worst.
That's a tough
but,
deal right there.
And I got to give a little bit. Jose Guillen gave us one of the greatest post-game locker room rants that I ever got to cover, and I got to cover some good ones during my time with the Kansas City Royals when he went off on the effing babies that don't know how to play the effing game on the team. That was worth some part of that contract. I don't know how much.
Yeah, not quite enough. Not quite enough, Dayton. Anyway, off the top of my head, easily those two are way worse than Hunter. And like I said, normal baseball teams give extensions to their young players and hope it works out. I mean, $15 million in today's baseball, I'm sorry. That's
you
just,
be
it's not that
take
much
that
money.
Chance.
And again, we would criticize the Royals in the past if they did not release Hunter Dozier until July or August. They did it early this time. And so it does, at least to me, signal a new change in management where they say, hey, sunk cost, move on. And that seems like the discussion that took place, and John Sherman signed off on it.
All right, we'll take a break back into this on WHB. Hey, Kansas City, Stephen St. John here for my friends at Kansas City Credit Union. If you're thinking about opening a savings account for your kid, go to Kansas City Credit Union. You can open a savings account for as little as $25 with no monthly account fees, and it helps teach kids about money and savings at an early age. You can also check out more information about becoming a member if you go to KansasCityCreditUnion.com/810Sports. There's three convenient locations, one in the Northland, one by the stadiums, and one downtown. You can also get more information, like I said, about opening a savings account for your kid and giving them an opportunity to learn about different financial terms so they're more familiar as they get older, and provides a place for allowance, birthday money, etc., so they can watch it grow. You can also be entered for a chance to win the new Kansas City Edition Monopoly game from Kansas City Credit Union. For more information about opening a savings account or becoming a member, go to KansasCityCreditUnion.com/810Sports. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. On paper, Jesse Newell, is the Chiefs' offensive line better than last year's?
I asked you this last week.
Okay. I know, but I turned the tables on you.
Oh, the tea just topsy-turvied you. The
tables have been turned.
Am I on? Okay, now I'm on. Yeah, you asked me this last, or I asked you this last week.
Yeah, now I'm asking you. I've been waiting for a week to re-ask this back at you.
That's messed up. Well, you know why I asked you is because I didn't have the answer. So,
but now I'm hoping you have the answer now. You researched it.
Why would I have it now?
I mean, it's been a week, Jesse. What have you been doing this whole time?
Yeah.
Apart from trying to make Anthony Sherman mad.
Make your prediction.
Nate's one to talk over here.
it's called deflection, Jesse. Mm.
You know, I will say yes, because I just can't ignore the fact that they gave one of the richest salaries to any offensive lineman this offseason. And they obviously love Juwan Taylor and his athleticism. And, you know, he fits in the profile of being young, being a free agent pretty early. That just gives them so much upside. And we talked last week, there's absolute reason to think that the downside could be lower. We talked to Donovan Smith yesterday, and he seemed ready to go. He discussed the injuries. He had an elbow injury and a foot injury last year that limited him. He talked about wanting to get back out there and show what he could do full strength, and you know how in football you suck it up and you play for the team. And I'm telling you, like, Sherman could tell you that too. Like, those guys, when we go around them in the locker room some of these game days, you can tell. I mean, to go out there on Sundays and compete when they are as beat up as they are for the good of the team, it really takes something. So I'm in the thought process that Donovan Smith will have a bounce back year, that Juwan Taylor, his upside is so high. And then we talk about the interior guys. I mean, why would you expect any of them to be, I mean, maybe Joe Tooney takes a half step back just because of age, but why would Creed Humphrey be worse? And why would Trey Smith be worse? So I'll go with the upside. I'll say it's better. But you know, that's not taken away from Orlando Brown and Andrew Wiley, who did great last year. I just think, what they like with Juwan Taylor and what he can do from a physical standpoint is something the Chiefs did not have a season ago.
The whole question is about Donovan Smith, like you said.
Yeah.
The interior of the line is the same. And, you know, Trey Smith and Creed Humphrey are ascending players. You have every reason to believe they're going to be better. And Joe Tooney's still going to be very, very good.
Yeah.
Juwan Taylor, if indeed he's the right tackle, that even though Andrew Wiley was solid, it appears to be an upgrade. And with his athleticism and his upside, you think that's a plus. So then it all comes down to Donovan Smith. And not only what he is compared to what he was last year, but what he is compared to what Orlando Brown Jr. was last year. Play the clip from Donovan Smith that we have. Here he talks about the accomplishments in his career and trying to add to the list.
I'm a selfish person, so I mean, Pro Bowl, all of those things, yeah, it matters, but not really. I'm more about the, obviously, championship thing and be able to get there and get that. That means a lot more. And then just winning games and having fun, you know, that's what I think means the most, you know, to me. Outside of that, everything else will take care of itself. So as long as I'm a team player, as long as I'm out there doing the best that I can do for my team, everything else will take care of itself. I feel like I accomplished a lot of my goals from initially coming into the league. So, yeah, just keep building on them.
I think he said, I'm a selfish player, which is that like a combination between selfless and selfish?
Play it again, let's hear it.
Realistically, I mean, I'm a selfish person, so I mean, Pro Bowl.
He's a selfish person. It's like a combination between the two. He meant selfless.
If indeed, and it's a big if, but there's a possibility there. If indeed his decrease in production and quality of play was predominantly because of injuries, and he bounces back, not to what he was the year before, but just closer to what he was in 2021 than he was in 2022, then the Chiefs just got over on the rest of the league. I mean, because you pointed out, not the end-all, be-all, but you pointed out the Pro Football Focus numbers from 21. Excellent. Last year, not good, but there are legitimate physical reasons why his play was not as good as the year before. And if he's back healthy and you had Juwan Taylor, like you said, and this offensive line is better, again, you're going to have teams midway through the season scratching their heads like, now, why was Donovan Smith available that late for that contract to that team? Right? I mean, it has a chance to be one of those fantastic signings that people will scratch their heads and wonder why the NFL and the rest of the teams let it happen like that.
Yeah, and just real quick as a recap, I mentioned this last week, but we can go Pro Football Focus grades for him year by year.
PFF.
From 2015. 62.5, 63.9, 64.9, 66.4, 70.4, 71.8, 83.3.
That's 21.
And then last year, 58.1. So, again, it seems like an abrupt fall. And sometimes you go ask for the reasons, and we talked about the potential reasons. Now, again, it's a wide spectrum. You know, could he be completely cooked at 29 years old? I guess that's a possibility. But it sure seems to be more logical to me that he had an elbow injury he was playing through, he had a foot injury he was playing through. And the other thing that gives the Chiefs a little bit of cushion here is, historically, he has been a better pass blocker than a run blocker.
And, like, if you told me he was 35, well, yeah, maybe he just fell off. But, I mean, at that age?
It was kind of funny yesterday, you know, somebody brought up in a question that said, hey, you're 31, what do you think? Hey, stop. Oh, no, stop. I'm 29.
That's right. Well, hey, that's a difference.
Yeah, absolutely. Wanted to be like, hey, wait a minute. No. I'm 29. So, yeah, I think that he said fully healthy now. Again, you have to trust him on that. I mean, if we want to go by his health history, he missed almost no games until last year. I mean, he was completely healthy for the Buccaneers and kind of kept playing through that. So, yeah, I mean, there's potential upside here. Again, for the Chiefs, it's a one-year stopgap for now, which is kind of how they've played this thing out for a while now at left tackle. But I could definitely see the reasons they would want a motivated guy who was injured a year ago and buy low on him and get that thing solidified. Again, to avoid the worst-case scenario, which was, what if Jawan Taylor does not work out left tackle? Then what do you do with a roster that already was sort of ready to go back and repeat for a Super Bowl?
Okay, so we don't know who's going to make the team. We have at least an idea. And so this, knock on wood, it doesn't happen. But let's say week three, Donovan Smith out, leg injury for a few weeks. Then who's left tackle, based on who's on the roster now?
Yeah, I mean, I think it depends so much on, this is why we all go to training camp, because we have a big eye on Wanye Morris. Where is he going to be? Which side? I would think if Jawan Taylor is now your right tackle, I would think Wanye Morris now is taking reps at left tackle. And you're hoping to give him a redshirt year, develop him, see if he can be the left tackle.
Because that's a question. Do you move Jawan Taylor over? Is there a true backup left tackle where you say, you know what, Jawan Taylor, we leave you there? If something has Donovan Smith, we have a backup there. Is Lucas Niang involved? Like,
well,
whatever happened to Kennard?
You also keep a swing tackle on the roster for this reason, too. So we can't leave out Prince Tegawanogo, who was with the team last year.
Marco's guy.
That's sort of what they're there for, right? Is if you lose your tackle, you can put him in at left side or right side. We know that break glass in case of emergency, Joe Tooney as well. And they have Nick Allegretti on the roster. So, you know, you're trying to do the least amount of harm here. And it was the Cincinnati game, right?
Yes.
The Cincinnati game on the road where he stepped right in and no pressures, you know, stepped right in and did the job. So they have some options there, but I think that's the point, right? I mean, they have some options there, even with a worst-case scenario.
And but leave Jawan Taylor at right tackle, you think?
I think you do that. Okay. I think right now, when it comes to the football world and the studies that have been out there, there used to kind of be a big push for left tackle, blindside. I think we've seen with Patrick Mahomes that he can do a little bit of dancing and get around it. And whatever he has in his mind, the spatial awareness thing, I'm not sure we've ever seen it in NFL history, just to be able to feel that pressure and move in a certain way. And pressure is pressure. So I think you just leave that guy at right tackle, let him be a great right tackle. And the studies would show you now that a right tackle is basically just as important as a left tackle. Don't mess around with things. Let him be there. Let him be comfortable. Let him be his dominant self in his dominant position.
I think that Niang you're going to like this phrase, Stephen. He's an X factor for this team.
By the way, according to Facebook, X Factor is back and once again allowed at Arrowhead Stadium. But that's from his
the
Facebook
ban.
Account.
He says the ban's been lifted.
Says, I mean, there's no like official word. For
yeah,
it. I don't. I'm not expecting a press release from Ted Cruz about this. Although, man, who knows? Maybe
hey,
Brad G
might
can
be worth it.
Up. But
yeah.
What I'm telling you is, since you want to bring that up and be smart mouth, he's
proclaimed himself
that he's back in Chiefs Kingdom.
He doesn't have the authority to do that.
Well, you don't know that. So I'm telling you that. So Jesse,
but
I'm not telling your business, but article I'd read.
Good to know.
What is the status of X Factor?
No, just like the whole thing. Article I'd read.
Yeah. That's maybe a news magazine piece there.
Because,
I mean, if you really want to go all the way through it.
Because if you remember the video clip of him walking the hospital scrubs, he walked so Chiefsaholic could run. for a lot of people that
from the cops.
Run from the police.
Yeah.
There's a lot there. But I'm just telling you, if it's like that, you know, X Factor by Jesse Newell, I'm reading it.
You read the Chiefsaholic ESPN story. I know. Yeah.
Yeah, but that's not, you get to the real origin story.
Yeah, the real stuff. Right. But Lucas Niang, to me, is a big X Factor because we don't know what he could be if he's healthy. And maybe he never will be. He could be one of those guys that just, never. He could be the Adalberto Mondesi of the Chiefs or something, but you know if he does, I think that most of what we saw when he came out in the draft was the physical ability is there to be a frontline NFL offensive lineman, and when you add Wanya Morris to the guys that we've already talked about here, I feel like this. I kind of feel like you touched on this a little bit earlier, Jesse, when you said, "Well, I think the Chiefs are going to be better because they went out and spent big money on somebody." And there's just this implicit trust you have between Veach and Andy Reid that they're going to know what they're doing when it comes to this. And if that's the case, I mean, like what we know about Andy Reid is he likes offensive linemen and he likes versatile offensive linemen. He likes guys that can play multiple positions. And it seems like they have a whole bunch of options, to go back to your point, of guys that can play in different spots. So you just feel like it raises the floor so much on what, you know, what this offense there. Yes, there's a lot of unknown to it, but it does feel like there's a whole lot of options within that unknown. So they're going to find something that works through the course of the season. Is that a fair way to look at it?
Yeah, I think so. The only thing I'll say about Lucas Niang is, you know, right after the draft, when Brett Veach was talking, he said, "What is the plan at left tackle and right tackle?" He said, "Well, Juwan Taylor at left tackle, and then Wanya Morris, Lucas Niang, potentially Darian Kennard at right tackle." He said that then, and then 3 days later or whatever, signed Dominic. Donovan Smith. It's like, I don't know. I don't know what to expect from him. I don't know that the Chiefs know what to expect from him. Because
he's an X factor, Jesse.
But you see what I'm saying, right?
Yeah.
Like, if they had the faith in him that you're talking about, the guy that started over Andrew Wiley for a while, then maybe you don't need Donovan Smith.
How could you have the faith in him?
That's exactly it.
Yeah.
But that's why it's a good X factor, but probably not a good plan A.
Right.
And that's
right.
That's where this Donovan Smith signing comes in. Mm-hmm. It's not a plan A anymore. And it muddies up a little bit because, again, if you're talking Lucas Niang, you're probably talking right tackle. Well, that spot's taken, unless there's injury. So now you're talking about more depth. So I don't know. We haven't seen much, obviously. You know, we'll see more in training camp and everything. But to me, this Donovan Smith transaction sort of, whether the Chiefs can come out and say it or not, that tells me a little bit what they think about Lucas Niang, which is they are not going to put all their eggs in that basket. If he comes into something, great, and they have him on the roster, but it's an X factor. It's not the first option, and they made that clear when they signed Donovan Smith.
That's the good thing about like this roster construction, the depth of the offensive line. They don't. I mean, clearly there are important players, but there's no eggs in anyone's basket, you know, because like not a huge. I like the guy. Not a huge news item in the offseason, but I like Nick Allegretti.
Yeah.
He's got plenty of starting experience. He's versatile. And if you could plug him in the interior offensive line and say, okay, we're good for a couple of games. I know Grunty loves him.
Yeah.
But to have the luxury of have that kind of guy just as quality depth, I think that's huge. And I think this will always be a product of the painful lesson that they had to learn in that Super Bowl against Tampa. It might be a decade of overcorrection, you know, with maybe too much. I don't think you'd ever have too much depth, but like, we are never going to let this happen again. And they're always going to go, you know, err on the side of caution, which when it comes to the offensive line and protecting Patrick Mahomes, I'm good with.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Matt Miller, who's an ESPN draft analyst, I talked to him before the draft, and he said he talked to somebody about Brett Veach a few years ago and talked about, the thing that Brett Veach will always do is he will always have playmakers for Patrick and always protect Patrick. And that seems like that's the plan here. It's like you are giving yourself a lot of different options to do that. And, man, you mentioned it, Stephen. Like, it's just crazy to have this conversation. You have to go back and think. Like, I was looking up the other day just some research, and like the end of the 08 season for the Chiefs, like they lose 16-6 to the Bengals on the last game of the season. Like Larry Johnson wants out. Herm Edwards is a lame duck. I mean, they go 2-14.
I think I want it out.
I mean, think we're talking about like, oh, hey, by the way, the Chiefs have probably the second best center in the NFL. Oh, by the way, they have, you know, the guards position, two top 10 guys. Oh, by the way, they went out and signed the top guy because they have extra salary cap room at right tackle to this lucrative contract who they love and is athletic. And, oh, this guy who had an 83 grade for Pro Football Focus a year ago and then battled injuries, he's going to be stuck at left tackle. And maybe that's a concern for this team. You know, it's pretty amazing to think about what we think about with the Chiefs and kind of how they've set that up. So, yeah, it's a credit to them, but it just is amazing how things have come and how far it has come under Brett Veach, under Clark Hunt, and what we talk about.
The Clarks.
The Clarks, as you talked about last hour. Yep, absolutely.
The but Clark family.
It is amazing to think about. We're talking about this, and, man, the Chiefs are set at offensive line probably pretty good, no matter how this falls.
Jesse, we had a different set of topics in 2008 we were going through. I can dig those up, and again, let me tell you, not enjoyable. But I will say this: there was a quick roster move by the Royals that they just tweeted out. Nate Eaton option to AAA. They will announce a corresponding roster move tomorrow. Fingers crossed. Drew Waters
should be it. Should be it.
The expectations of Drew Waters.
He goes in this group, man.
I have him for a dollar in my AL Roto team. Yeah. Let's talk about his upside.
I was going to say this is not the competitive pricks, but whatever the competitive pricks would be.
It's the bada bings,
baby. The bada bings. Okay.
The bada bings, bada booms. I'm looking for some outfield help. Let's go.
Yeah, I think he can give you some help. He's been hidden in Omaha.
He's shown some power, and look, the outfield has not been a source of production for the Royals, and so if you can get something out of center field, maybe at least he could say, hey, I'm one of the three guys you can look forward to counting on in the next couple of years. That'd be great.
Yeah, and Jackie Bradley's been better lately, but, I mean, that was a guy that was specifically signed because Drew Waters got hurt.
Right.
If that's the guy that eventually you need a roster spot for, you know, that's the sort of move eventually that you hope that Drew Waters can stay healthy and run out in the outfield and, you know, do what they hope he can do and be one of these pieces that they can rely upon moving forward.
I'll look forward to watching
him. Yeah, I'm excited about having him.
We'll take a break back into this on WHB.
Well, I'll tell you what, we've been feasting on all this red meat from Greengrass Cattle Company that they brought in. The only thing that would be better to wash it down would be a little bit of Blue Note bourbon. I'm going to wait till after the show, though, Stephen, before I have any of that. Look, Blue Note bourbon is my go-to right now when it comes to having an old-fashioned or even just a glass of bourbon on the rocks at home every once in a while, because it's award-winning straight bourbon whiskey that tastes every bit as good as it sounds. They're on the shelf at your local favorite liquor store. They should be in your local restaurant as well. And if they're not, you need to tell them that you want it, because you want to drink good bourbon. You want to enjoy it like a gentleman or a gentle person, whatever you are. but you don't want to spend an arm and a leg. Blue Note Bourbon is perfect because it's reasonably priced, but they take the time to put a little bit of soul in every single bottle. I think if you try it, you'll agree with Whiskey Advocate that had is at number 7 best whiskey of 2022. Blue Note Bourbon. Ask for it by name. Blue Note Bourbon sounds like a good time.
Nice. Our friend Natalie from Delta Dental brought you guys pullovers.
It's a beautiful pullover. Look very comfortable, too. And some golf balls. What a day. We got beef in here. We got golf balls. We got Jesse Newell taking us to school.
Fantastic.
Delta. Am I not on? I'm on.
Why don't you
Marco?
What's going on in there with you?
Delta Dental, to me, you know what I think of, Nate?
The Jayhawk shoot-around.
KU basketball growing
Delta
up.
Delta Jayhawk shoot-around.
They had freaking commercials all over the place.
Mm-hmm. It all comes back to KU basketball. I mean, Kevin McCullough's back, so what does that mean now?
They're going to go from preseason number one to preseason number
all
one.
Right.
Can I ask my one fear?
God,
shooting
finally they
your
get
one
something.
Fear, right?
Lance Leipold was a Chiefs practice, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was.
See,
I spotted him.
If I cared about the school that I root for's football team. I would have mentioned that sometime in this hour. You probably didn't even know that or care.
I didn't
know
that.
Because you know what you know. Oh, basketball.
I'm actually very, very excited about KU football season.
Well, it comes before basketball season, and you won't talk about it. Lance Leipold was at Chiefs practice, and I'm thinking, that's where I want my coach. Why isn't Eli Drinkwitz at Chiefs practice? That's what I'm saying to me, myself in my head.
Lance Leipold was at the draft. He's everywhere.
I'd like it, but you don't even want to talk about it. All you want to talk about is transfer portal, this and that.
Is KU going to be able to shoot?
Yeah, that's a good question.
That's the one thing I worry about, because McCullough's an average shooter or below.
Let's KJ talk about what's wrong with the number one team.
Is that a legit kill? I mean, but like Harris, Adams, McCullough are all going to be starters, right?
Yeah. You can win other ways, but yeah, that's a concern. We'll see if Timberlake comes in. That's kind of what he's known for. If he can defend a little bit, then they should be fine. But Steven said it pretty well. It just made them number one with the bullet now, so they'll be all right.
Did you hear that, Steven? Number one.
Marco, who to bet on in this game five between the Celtics and the Heat?
Look, I don't want to brag, guys, but I might have gone plus 800 on the Celtics to win the series. When they were down
3-0.
I might have. Celts. Wow.
If they win tonight, then all of a sudden all the pressure's on Miami. Like, oh boy.
To win the series now, they're plus 225. Mm. So it's
who you got tonight, Marco? Don't be lying to people. Come on.
Heat. Screw the Celtics. You'll never hear me pick the Celtics.
Let's go, Lorenzo Butler.
But he even left my mic on to say whoa afterwards. What a nice guy.
Thank God. Like he's had an edge in him today. Does it?
Well, ever since he heard that Vanderbilt play-by-play, he's been on a different level.
Gabe Vincent ruled out with an ankle.
That's not good.
For tonight. So throw that in there.
That's
everyone have a great day right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
The Border Patrol has been brought to you by Walker Medical Linen Services, setting the standard in healthcare laundry services for hospitals, surgery centers, and medical clinics in Kansas City. Walker Medical Linen delivers laundry you can depend on. HLAC certified to the highest standards. It's Walker Medical Linen Services, online at walkermls.com.
Bye-bye.